Wednesday, June 17th, 2020. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly. I'm coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope everyone in your life, your friends, your family, yourself, hope you're all staying healthy. We are happy to have you here with us today. Hey, and I know that it's only Wednesday. I realize that. We've still got a few days to go to finish out this week. But do not forget, Sunday, this next Sunday, is Father's Day, which of course is observed annually on the third Sunday in June. Of course, Father's Day is set aside to honor the role that fathers play in the family structure and in society. Back in 1966, President Lyndon B. Johnson issued the first presidential proclamation honoring fathers on the third Sunday in June. Then President Richard Nixon signed into law a permanent national holiday. That was back in 1972, over 50 years after Mother's Day came into existence. But I mean, when you think about it, that's kind of just how we roll, isn't it? I mean, moms get the recognition. Dads get zip. And look, I understand. I do, because the good dads are more rare. But if you have a good dad, you probably have some pretty good kids in that household, because as we know, I mean, I know there's been comedians talk about it, there's been a lot of people talk about it, but there's nothing that beats just wait till your dad gets home to truly, honestly motivate a child. And look, I'm not bashing moms, not by a long shot, but if you have a dad that really did his job as a parent, I'm just saying this, it's a game changer. My mom was great. My mom didn't take anything off of me as a kid. Oh, but if she were to drop, you wait till your dad gets home. When I was acting a fool, oh, I shaped right up. Like, it was instantaneous that I shaped up right away. Need me to wash the dishes, mom? Like, I'm looking for things to do to help mom out, to try to get on her good side. Maybe I can get her to forget that she was going to tell my dad. Mom, you need me to, I don't know, do some laundry? I can fold the laundry, mom. I can hang the laundry out if you need. Need me to frame the basement or hang some drywall, mom? Hey, I would do anything to try to convince her you don't really need to bring dad into the equation. Hold up, mom. Let's discuss this a little bit. What do we need to do today to just keep this whole conversation just between you and me? Let's talk about how we can do that for the day. We don't need to go get outside parties involved. Dad has enough to worry about. I mean, you look at the situation with my dad. My dad was a sheet metal worker that raced cars and then fought Golden Gloves as a teenager. You think I wanted my mom to tell him that I decided to talk back that day? Yeah, I would have rather told Mike Tyson his face tattoo looked stupid than have my mom tell my dad on me. So on this next Sunday, make sure you are taking care of those good dads in your lives. Make sure you let them know you appreciate all the hard work that they do, and go ahead and get them that terrible tie and awful dress socks present that they never, ever wanted, but that's what they seem to get every single year at this time. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show and maybe let us know what you are planning to get your dad on Sunday, we would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. And I talk about this every week. If you need to reach out, if you want to interact with someone, maybe you've got a question about sports. Maybe you want to talk about a specific team or specific player. Maybe you have some feedback for the show. Maybe you want us to cover a certain subject, or you need a little advice. Make sure that you reach out to us. Sometimes the quickest way to get a hold of us is over on social media. Hit us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll get right back to you. We might end up using what you sent us on the show, but if you don't want us to do that, we'll just shoot you an answer right back. We always are sure to do that. Also, remember, we do put a video portion of the podcast over on YouTube. Make sure that you head over to YouTube and subscribe to The Dose over there. Thanks to everyone going over there that has subscribed, that is watching the videos each week. We just put a little clip of the podcast up over on YouTube, give you a little bit of a different look at what's going on here at the podcast. Also, as long as we're all doing all of that online shopping, make sure you stop by tpublic.com and you pick up your Daily Dose gear. TeePublic is just doing sale after sale after sale because they know that everyone is doing so much online shopping. So make sure that you stop by tpublic.com, search Daily Dose, scroll down until you see our logo, and there you can get exactly what it is that you need. But I mean, we've got social distancing masks over there. Hey, a lot of places are requiring you to wear a mask. Why not wear a Daily Dose mask that gives you a nice big smile every single time you walk by someone? Plus, we've got Daily Dose t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts. You can pick any color you want, a number of items and a number of different styles over at tpublic.com. So make sure that you stop by and pick up your Daily Dose gear. Hey, today on the show, we do have a few news stories coming out in the world of sports that we need to discuss. And then with the NBA looking like maybe, possibly, it's going to be coming back later this summer, we are going to get a chance to see which teams are going to step up and win big games when it matters. But will we have a team miss their opportunity to win the championship this year? It could happen. We'll be talking about that here in a few minutes. And of course, we will have a Daily Dose top five for you. Speaking of a team that could step up, whoever steps up this year in kind of this shortened weird season, they might end up having an asterisk next to their name. We're going to have a Daily Dose top five for you later that you are not going to want to miss. So let's go ahead and jump in right now. And first up, the 2020 Major League Baseball Draft took place last week. And honestly, no one whatsoever cared about it in any way. Like, kids that got drafted didn't even care. I don't even know who watched this. I'm told it was on TV. I have no clue what happened in the baseball draft. Maybe you know. If you'd like to share that with me, feel free. But I didn't pay 1 ounce of attention to it because it's the baseball draft. And they shortened it down and it was stupid. And who cares about baseball at this point anyways? So no one cares about that. Moving over to the world of NASCAR.
Who?
Yes, we're going to talk a little bit of NASCAR today. I know we don't talk a lot of, you know, auto racing in general, but we had some news take place in NASCAR this week. Just 2 days after Bubba Wallace, the lone black driver in NASCAR's 3 National Series, called for the sanctioning body to ban all Confederate flags at racetracks, the organization actually did it. In a statement last week, NASCAR said this: the presence of the Confederate flag at NASCAR events runs contrary to our commitment in providing a welcoming and inclusive environment for all fans, our competition, and our industry. Bringing people together around a love for racing and the community that it creates is what makes our fans and our sport special. And I mean, for me personally, I'm fine with it. I'm fine with them banning that Confederate flag. I know some people, they look at the Confederate flag as this kind of symbol of how, like, Americans, we have this rebellious nature and, like, we push back against what maybe other people are doing. We have this, just this rebellion to us. And they kind of look at the Confederate flag in that way. I don't know. I mean, I don't look at it that way at all. I look at it as a flag that tried to split our nation up and also a flag that lost. Let's not ever forget that. So I don't have any allegiance to it. I don't really care. But I know that a lot of people hate that flag. I know that it means a lot of, you know, really, really bad things to other people. So I'm fine. If you want to take away the Confederate flag, it doesn't have any meaning whatsoever to me. But here is what I'm more interested to see. Will NASCAR have, like, flag cops running around the racetrack? Like, are we going to see flag cops, like, running through the infields, confiscating all the Confederate flags? Because you think of what we have, like, in the police department, and you know it's not going to be that level of person. You're going to have to go a few notches down. You're going to have, like, a mall cop. So you're going to have, like, fat mall cop running around the infield, getting outsmarted by, I don't know, local rednecks hiding their flags, like playing keep away with their Confederate flags. Now, maybe it's just me, or does that actually sound amazing? Like, I want to see that. I can't wait to watch Confederate flag keep away. Forget the races. I'd rather watch that every single week anyways. I don't know. I'm pretty excited about the removal of the Confederate flag, but maybe that's just me. You know, we talked about it a little bit last week here on The Dose. The NBA is set to return in Orlando on that last day of July, but now there are concerns about that bubble situation in Orlando where players and their families would kind of be all together in like a quarantine sort of situation. The problem is the players and their families are now coming out and saying that they are worried about their health in that situation. And players want to be able to sit out if they aren't comfortable playing. So they're actually hoping that the NBA Players Association will step in and kind of give them that, hey, it's okay. If you don't want to play, you won't be penalized. You can go ahead and sit out. You'll just have to sacrifice, you know, some of your salary. So let me see if I have this straight. Perfectly healthy NBA players might sit out some games? Yeah, I don't know if this is news at all. I mean, this happens literally every single night during an NBA season. Now, to be fair.
Don't say to be fair. Hate when people say to be fair. It sounds like to be fair.
To be fair.
Oh, to be fair.
The bubble concept in Orlando, it is kind of dumb. I mean, these teams can play in their own cities. They can travel on their own charter flights. They can play in their own empty arenas. But when Disney World is now actually going to be open, and it is opening, how much of a bubble are you actually going to be in? So I do think the bubble idea is kind of dumb. I think it's kind of outdated the more we know, but whatever. But then we also have the NBA Players Association Executive Director, Michelle Roberts, saying the players she represents spent this last weekend discussing how they could best use, in quotation marks, their obvious influence, either by playing or not playing, to make sure we enhance and move this movement forward rather than distracting from it. After nearly 100 NBA players participated in a Friday night call in which Brooklyn Nets guard and NBA Players Association Vice President Kyrie Irving made a case against resuming the basketball season in Orlando. Robert said players have been spending the last few days considering how the league's return might affect the Black Lives Matter movement. Okay, first off, I like how Kyrie Irving is the guy that's leading this charge. Oh, you mean the guy that can't play anyway because he's hurt? Nice of him to go ahead and volunteer everyone else to sit out since he can't play anyways. But here's the thing. NBA, you are basketball players. Being a basketball player is a good thing. Being a basketball player might get people to listen to you. Here's the other side of that. If you're not a basketball player, no one's really going to listen to you. You can use the platform of basketball, or you can choose to just be an average guy, not get paid, and just take up this social cause. Here's the question that I have for Kyrie Irving. Do you think people are going to listen to your opinions on social issues for some other reason than your basketball prowess? Say because of your super scientific flat earth beliefs? Oh. I'm not sure that's going to go well. Let's move over to the NFL. The Denver Broncos have agreed to a multi-year deal with FanDuel to make the sportsbook their official sports betting and daily fantasy football partner. The Broncos are actually the first NFL team to formally announce such an agreement since the league did clear the way earlier this year to be involved with sports betting. The agreement will allow FanDuel to use the Broncos logo in its advertising in the state of Colorado, and the company will advertise in the stadium, on the Broncos TV and radio broadcast, and on the team's website. For those of you who haven't heard, sports gambling is now legal in Colorado, so you can now bet legally on things like how many games the Denver Broncos will win this season, or how many sacks offensive tackle Garrett Bowles will give up this season, or how many beers that general manager John Elway drinks while he's making personnel moves. Some very, very exciting things are taking place here in the Mile High City is what I'm saying. Finally, last week, we saw that the University of Southern California has finally forgiven former Trojan college football superstar Reggie Bush after they had been punished by the NCAA for all the improper benefits that Reggie and his family were getting while he was playing for USC. And for years now, Reggie Bush has not been allowed on their campus. He returned his Heisman. There was a lot of love loss between USC and between Reggie Bush. Like, it was a very, very bitter situation. Now, I personally, I don't understand why USC was mad at Reggie. they didn't have beef with him. The beef was between him and the NCAA. So I don't know why USC banned him. I don't know if they were trying to get in like good with the NCAA. Like, are you trying to get into their good graces? Why did you have to be mad at Reggie Bush? He didn't do anything to you. The NCAA, which I think was actually pretty heavy-handed in what they gave USC, that was between Reggie and the NCAA, though. That had nothing to do with USC, but they got mad at him and they banned him from the campus. Well, now it sounds like they have finally forgiven Reggie Bush and he is welcome back with open arms. And like I said, I actually think that seems fair. I think that's a good thing. I hope we see Reggie back on campus. I hope Reggie is maybe even involved with that football program. We know they probably need a little bit of help. Having Reggie Bush around doesn't hurt at all. I mean, this is a good, good thing. Mend this bridge and get these two back together because they were great together. Reggie Bush is one of the greatest college football players in history. He played in one of the most storied football programs. Let's have USC and Reggie Bush back together getting along. Plus, I mean, who knows? Maybe the Heisman can now also be returned to its rightful owner too. You know, Texas quarterback Vince Young.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Okay, coming back, the NBA season is set to return on July 31st. We're going to see how that all goes. But I know that we've all kind of forgotten what was even going on during the season itself. It seems so long ago since they were actually playing real basketball. But there are a couple of teams that were probably the favorites and are now the favorites to make a run at a title. And if they miss that chance, we could be looking back at those teams and we could be wondering what might have been. When we come back, we are going to be looking at some other teams that kind of left us wondering the same thing. What might have been? And we've been thinking about that for years now. Going to be looking at some great, great teams that didn't quite get it done when we get back. So at the end of July, the NBA is scheduled to restart their regular season that was stopped back in early March. But I mean, by this point, it's hard to even remember what was happening back in March. So let me go ahead and refresh your memory real quick. The Los Angeles Lakers were the big dog. I mean, yes, the Milwaukee Bucks had the better record, but the Lakers have LeBron James and they have Anthony Davis, and they were rolling the later we went into March. The Los Angeles Clippers were also in the mix too. They were holding down the number two seed in the West behind the Lakers, despite the fact that their superstar Kawhi Leonard only plays, I don't know, like every fifth night or something like that. Over in the East, you had the Bucks, you had the Toronto Raptors, and you had the Boston Celtics kind of battling it out for the top seed over in the Eastern Conference. And while at some point, we will be sure to dive fully into the NBA and kind of take a look at what might happen when all of this starts back up again, I wanted to do something a little bit different today. Because here's the question that I have for you today. If the Los Angeles Lakers don't win the title this year, what are we going to say? Like, if they come up short, if they get knocked out, either before the finals or in the finals, what are we all going to be saying? Probably things along the lines of, well, LeBron didn't get it done again. The break totally killed the Lakers. They were rolling. They were set to win it all before the shutdown, and they just never got their mojo back. But I mean, you look at that team, I don't know, they might have been the most talented team and they came up short. But here's the thing. There have been a ton of other teams that we looked at as the heavy favorite. But then, due to, I don't know, one reason or another, they kind of fell by the wayside. Today on the Daily Dose, we are going to take a look back in history, as we often do, and see what it was that happened to some of the greatest teams that never quite got it done. Because so many times, we can learn from history. I know you'd think like in this whole pandemic era, maybe some of us would be looking back at history and learning from it. I don't know, just lobbing that idea out there. But if we actually take the time to study history, a lot of times we can learn a lot from it. We're going to do that today on The Dose. Let's start off in Major League Baseball, where we have a few examples of some great, great teams that just came up short. And where else could we start but with the big red machine? Yes, the 1973 Cincinnati Reds, they were absolutely loaded. Look at the roster. Pete Rose, Johnny Bench, Tony Perez, Joe Morgan. The Reds won 99 games while scoring 741 runs in 1973. Unfortunately, they weren't all that stacked in the pitching department. And so when they ran into the New York Mets in the National League Championship Series, yeah, the Mets cooled off those bats and sent the Cincinnati Reds home. The Mets would go on to lose to the Oakland A's in the World Series in 73. But when you look at the Oakland A's, I don't know, Cincinnati would have probably matched up with them pretty well, at least better than the Mets did. Unfortunately for Cincy, they never got the chance because the Mets took them out with their quality pitching and the Reds couldn't match them. I think the Reds were probably the most talented team. Matchups can sneak up on you though. But if there is one Major League Baseball team that I think of the most when I think of teams that should have been great, who else could it be? It's got to be the 2001 Seattle Mariners. They won 116 games in 2001. How could you not when you had eight players named to the All-Star team? But again, look at the talent that Seattle had. John Olerud, Ichiro Suzuki, Brett Boone, Edgar Martinez. The Mariners hold the distinctive stat of winning more games than anyone who didn't end up winning the title. As much firepower as that team had, they ran into some trouble again when they faced the New York Yankees in the ALCS. Because in that series, they were held to just eight total runs in those four losses, and Seattle went down in just five games. Now, you look at the Yankees pitching. I mean, guys like Andy Pettitte and Mike Mussina and, of course, Mariano Rivera. I mean, yeah, you're running into a bit of a buzzsaw there. Sometimes you get a bad draw in the playoffs. And that was a really bad draw for Seattle in 2001. And as a result, Seattle got sent home a little bit early. But you know, it isn't just American professional sports that have had teams that didn't get it done. I mean, go back to the 1980 Winter Olympics and you look at the Russians or the Soviets at the time. They had won the gold medal in hockey in every single Winter Olympic tournament since 1960. So for the past 20 years, Russia was winning them all. But we all know about the miracle on ice. So what in the world happened in 1980? Well, for one, you did have a great performance by Team USA. Like, that didn't hurt. The great play, the intensity that Team USA played with, the goaltending that they get from Jimmy Craig. I mean, you have a hot team playing probably better than their talent truly should have allowed them to play, but they were playing really, really well. But then you had some other things at play. You had the Soviets totally out of their comfort zone because they weren't used to losing. Forget losing. They weren't used to even being in a tight game. Up until that game against Team USA, the 1980 Russian Olympic team had beaten their opponents by a total of 51-11. I mean, they weren't in games. They were just blowing everyone out. They beat Japan 16-0 in hockey. Like, that's one thing in football. In hockey, 16-0. But again, you went in against Team USA. You faced a hot team. And you faced a hot team riding a ton of home court momentum. Now, home court momentum in this NBA season that we're going to have, it's not going to happen. Doesn't sound like there's going to be any fans in the stands. So you might have been pushing all year to get that home court advantage. I don't know if there's going to be a home court advantage in the NBA playoffs this year. And as a result, who knows how that affects these teams. But in 1980, you had Team USA feeling that momentum, hearing the fans chanting USA, and the Soviets kind of panic. I mean, they pull the greatest goaltender in the game at the time and bench him for a backup. Because what, he let in one soft goal? He's probably not going to give up a goal the rest of the game. And instead, the Soviets, they're mad. They're going to make a statement. They pull their goaltender. And the 1980 Russian Olympic team absolutely lost when they shouldn't have. I would imagine if those two teams play 10 times, Team USA wins that one. That's probably it. Because Russia was that stacked. But they didn't come out on top. Speaking of teams that absolutely should not have lost, let's go back to the year 2002 and let's move over to the world of college football. Hey, we've seen big, big upsets take place in college football like a million times. We can't count them all. Boise State beating Oklahoma. Appalachian State beating Michigan, James Madison beating Virginia Tech. We have had some huge upsets in the world of college football. But when you go back to 2002, you have a team that was so talented, they shouldn't have lost to anyone. Because the Miami Hurricanes had quarterback Ken Dorsey. They had Vince Wilfork, Jonathan Vilma, DJ Williams, Roscoe Parrish, Eric Winston, Sean Taylor, and Trell Roll. That is an NFL team on a college football field. Miami rolled through the regular season. They more than doubled their opponent's score on the scoreboard. But then, in the National Championship Fiesta Bowl, they face Ohio State, a very good team in their own right, but they didn't have the kind of like NFL talent that Miami did. But there were a few things that happened in that Fiesta Bowl. And of course, the biggest thing that everyone's going to talk about is that terrible pass interference call against Miami defender Glenn Sharp in overtime. I think it was an iffy call at any point in the game. Probably a worse call at the end of overtime when the game would have ended and the flag was so late, it looks so bad. Like the optics on that play are so terrible because the official right on top of the play doesn't throw his flag. The back judge comes in late and throws his flag. So it doesn't look great. But here's the thing, especially for Miami fans, it wasn't just the bad call that cost you that game. There were a lot of other things at play. For one, do you realize in that Fiesta Bowl that the Miami Hurricanes turned the ball over 5 times? How many games do you win when you have 5 turnovers? Doesn't happen very often. Also, Miami couldn't run the football all night. They had just 65 yards rushing on the ground. Meanwhile, Ohio State was having success on the ground. They rushed the ball for 145 yards. Oh, and also for 4 touchdowns. Hey, you can blame it on the ref if you want, and I get it. I think that's a bad call. But Ohio State was the better prepared team. And Ohio State executed better than the Miami Hurricanes did. I am convinced the Miami Hurricanes were more talented. Probably significantly more talented. But they didn't win it all. At the end of the game, it was the Ohio State Buckeyes running off the field with the trophy. Tough loss, bad call, I get all of it. But Ohio State came through and got the win when they had to. There's another college football team that has to be on our list today. And yes, you know who I'm talking about. We've already discussed that team at least a little bit when we were talking some news. They were going to cement that legacy with a 3rd championship in a row, and they were leading by 12. They were up 38-26 with just over 4 minutes remaining in the game. But the USC Trojans, with Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush, they could not hold on in the 2006 Rose Bowl. And as a result, we look back at USC kind of, you know, hey, what happened there? Well, Texas quarterback Vince Young is what happened there. Vince Young went completely crazy. The USC defense, you watch this game, if you go back and you watch it, the USC defense, like they couldn't find him. Like he's the best player on the field. And for some reason, their defense is like, hey, might want to keep an eye on that 10 guy. Oh, there he goes again. It happened over and over and over again. You also had USC head coach Pete Carroll out coaching himself. We've seen him do that maybe once or twice before. He tried to get real, real cute with some plays that he called. And so as a result of USC losing that game against Texas in the Rose Bowl, we kind of put USC in the really, really good category, but maybe not quite great. Hey, there's no shame in being really, really good. They just came up a little bit short for greatness by not being able to beat Texas in that 2006 Rose Bowl. Let's move over to the National Football League and let's talk about a few teams that could have been great in NFL history, but didn't quite make it. And when you think about this, honestly, I'm going through NFL teams and there are so, so many teams that we could put on this list. I mean, one of the first teams that comes to my mind easily is the 1992 Philadelphia Eagles. They had Randall Cunningham. They had Herschel Walker, Clyde Simmons, Reggie White. They went on to lose to the Dallas Cowboys in the divisional round of the playoffs. It wasn't like they got to the championship round. They lost in the divisional playoffs. That was a really talented team. I could obviously throw the 92 Houston Oilers in there too. up 35-3 on the Buffalo Bills in the wild card game, but then they allow the biggest comeback ever. I mean, the Houston Oilers, that was a pretty good team. They just couldn't run the football and play defense when they absolutely had to. It cost them. And what about those Buffalo Bills? The Buffalo Bills went to the Super Bowl 4 times and lost 4 times. But only one of those games was even close. So I didn't put the Bills in here, although we obviously could make a really strong case for them. No, I actually am going to throw out a team that when I say it, you're going to say, huh? Why would you put them in here? But I'm going to throw out the 1986 Cleveland Browns.
Who?
Who led by a touchdown at home in the AFC Championship game with just 5 minutes to play. And it's bitter cold and the opposing team hasn't done anything offensively all day. And it looks like the Cleveland Browns are actually going to be on their way to the first Super Bowl in their franchise's history. But then John Elway produces the drive. And it was Denver, not Cleveland, going to the Super Bowl. But when you look back at that Cleveland team, hey, those Browns teams, they were really, really good. They were really tough physically on both sides of the ball. Of course, you had quarterback Bernie Kosar. But you had running backs Kevin Mack and Ernest Biner. You had wide receivers Webster Slaughter and Reggie Langhorne. And then you had Ozzie Newsome at tight end. That's a pretty solid offensive unit. Defensively, you have Clay Matthews and Chip Banks and Hanford Dixon and Frank Minifield and Mike Johnson. Hey, those Browns would have probably given the New York Giants a better game in Super Bowl 21 than Denver did. But what happened instead? Well, Cleveland kind of played not to lose instead of just attacking Denver like they had been all game. And then all of a sudden you see John Elway just get hot, just get red hot. Everything he does is right. Everything Cleveland does is wrong. John Elway got in the zone. You allowed him to get there. And the problem for Cleveland isn't just that you lose that game. It's that you lose it tragically. Is that the word I'm looking for? In the way that you lost it, the next few seasons, when you face the Broncos again, we all kind of already knew what was going to happen. John Elway was going to beat the Cleveland Browns. The window slammed shut on that Browns team, and they never won anything. But I honestly think if they could have stopped Elway on that drive, if they could have made just one play, they probably go to the Super Bowl. They probably change the arc of that franchise. Because if they win that game, there's a good chance maybe they win the next year or the year after that. When Denver went to 3 Super Bowls, maybe that's Cleveland going to Super Bowls. Instead, we're still looking at Cleveland like, you guys are terrible. You've been terrible for years, and that's not changing anytime soon. The Cleveland Browns were a talented team. They just couldn't get that stop when they absolutely had to. You can't let a player like John Elway get hot. You can't let a great player get hot. He's going to tear you up, and that's what ended up happening. I would also consider the 2001 St. Louis Rams that lost to the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 36 to be one of those teams that was right at the edge of greatness, but they fell a little bit short. That team was loaded. But if I have to pick one other team to throw in here, a team that just didn't get it done when they had to, who else could I go with? I have to pick the 2007 New England Patriots. Again, they were so close to it. They go 16-0 in the regular season. They beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. They beat the San Diego Chargers. The playoffs are done. They're on to the Super Bowl. All they have to do is go to the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl, beat the 10-6 New York Giants, who did not look that great that year. I mean, New England was a 2-touchdown favorite. They had already beat the Giants in the regular season. This was going to be easy, and the Patriots were probably going to be considered the greatest NFL team of all time. Except that on Super Bowl Sunday, there was one major thing that hurt the Patriots. I don't think they were ready for the physicality of the New York Giants. The Giants defense registered double-digit hits on quarterback Tom Brady. They sacked him 5 times. And those hits add up. Those hits get in your head as a quarterback. The Giants weren't pretty. They were just really tough and really determined, and they eked out that 17-14 win on the crazy Eli Manning to David Tyree catch. but I really believe the physicality is what won that game. Coaching against toughness and coaching against physicality, it's one of the hardest things you can do. Because here's the thing. Sometimes those things don't come through in film. They don't come through on the scouting report until you're actually on the field. And you actually feel that other team hit you in the mouth. And you're like, man, that hurt. Like, these guys, they're angry. Like, they're coming after us. Every loose ball is theirs. Every kind of gritty toughness play, they're the ones making it. We're not making any of those plays. Sometimes that stuff doesn't come through in the scouting report. And I honestly believe New England walked into that game, thought they had an easy win, and they got socked in the mouth. And they went, oh, this isn't the same game. This isn't the same team we saw at the end of the regular season. These Giants, they're coming out to take our head off. I don't know if they're as talented as we are. I'm pretty sure they weren't. But they're going to hit us in the face until we just get sick of getting hit in the face. And as a result, the New York Giants beat that New England Patriots team that everyone would have called the greatest team of all time. Instead, they come up a little bit short. Okay, coming back, we still have to get over to basketball. Haven't really got to basketball yet. We have a couple of teams in both college basketball and in the NBA that never quite won as much as we thought they should. Plus, we still have to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Like I said earlier, no matter who wins the NBA Finals or Stanley Cup or maybe even the World Series, we're all going to view this team a little bit differently because of the strange season that they've played in this year. But other teams, other winners have had asterisks next to their name in the record books too. We might be seeing an asterisk next to whoever wins a title this year. So today on The Dose, we are looking back at teams that could have been great. They came up a little bit short of their ultimate goal. And in college basketball, we have to look at one team that never did reach that goal. Because they went to the Final Four 3 straight years. They had their own nickname. And they had a ton of NBA talent, including not one, but 2 Hall of Famers. But the Houston Cougars, Phi Slamma Jamma, they could never win the big one. They had Michael Young. They had Greg Cadillac Anderson. They had Ricky Winslow. And of course, they had the 2 Hall of Famers in Clyde the Glide Drexler and Akeem the Dream Olajuwon. In 1982, 83, and 84, the Cougars went to the Final Four. In those last 2 years, 83 and 84, they went to the final game. Now in 82, they lost to the eventual champion, University of North Carolina Tar Heels, in the Final Four. But in 83, they got beat by a team that they were better than. It was the Cinderella North Carolina State Wolfpack pulling off that crazy upset in the championship game. And then in 84, Georgetown kind of handled them in the title game. So with all of that talent, why were the Cougars unable to get it done? Why couldn't they win a title? Well, for one, it seemed like they always got into foul trouble. Houston did a lot of pressing. They did a lot of trapping. They were a very aggressive defensive team. But they also did a lot of fouling. And a lot of times you can look at a team and say, hey, that team, they're really, really good defensively. But if you foul a lot, it doesn't matter how good you are. Because fouling negates all of that hard work that you did defensively. You cannot be a fouling team and be a good defensive team. The two can't coexist. All of their fouling got them into serious foul trouble. We saw a number of times in the championship game, you know, guys like Clyde Drexler, they were having to sit on the bench because they got too many fouls in the first half. And then you had another aspect to Houston that they couldn't overcome. They weren't a very good free throw shooting team. The University of Houston shot right around 61-62% as a team in those 3 seasons. Now, in tight games, that's a killer. These are literally free points. You have to go take them, and Houston couldn't do it. They knocked down like 1 of 2 every single time they went to the free throw line. That comes back and bites you eventually. But it wasn't just those 2 things. Yes, they fouled too much, which negates a lot of their defense. Yes, they missed way too many free throws. And a lot of times we saw other teams kind of go to that hack-a-shack kind of defense. Hey, just foul them. Put them on the free throw line. They won't make them anyways. But it wasn't just that, because you also had head coach Guy Lewis. Guy Lewis was a weird dude. And he tended to do really kind of strange things. I mean, he brought all this talent into Houston and he told them, hey, when you come to Houston, we play loose and we play fast and you're going to see dunks and we're going to throw alley-oops and it is just a loose, fast, carefree kind of game. That is the style that the Houston Cougars played with. And that is, for the most part, the style that they won with. But every once in a while, Guy Lewis would just change everything. They would be playing a team like North Carolina State, and he would have his team pull out and play like a four corners game. You're more talented. You're better than them. Why in the world are you slowing it down? If anything, they should be slowing it down, not you. It was unpredictable. It was so bizarre. I don't know if he just didn't grasp fully what he was doing. I don't know what he was doing. Guy Lewis was a strange coach. Really good recruiter. Really strange sometimes X's and O's coach. And as a result, Houston never could get wins. Now, to be fair, they did lose to some really, really good teams. That 82 North Carolina team with Worthy and Jordan, that's a great team. That 84 Georgetown team with Patrick Ewing in that group, that's a great team. That North Carolina State group, gritty, tough, find a way to win kind of team, but not a great, overly talented team. And Houston managed to lose that one to them, and they absolutely should have won it. Our other college hoops team that came up short is a team that had actually won a title. They had won it all the year before, so they knew what it took. But someone please tell me why the 1991 Nevada-Las Vegas team didn't win back-to-back championships, because that team was so, so good. In 1990, UNLV had gone 35-5. They plowed through the tournament. They smashed every team they faced. They won the championship by blowing out Duke by 30 points. Larry Johnson, Stacey Augmon, Greg Anthony, and Anderson Hunt, they were all coming back for one more year. So the next season, UNLV is going to be the champion. They're so loaded. They are 34-0, and they are about to see that same Duke squad in the Final Four and in practices leading up to that rematch. That team is not focused. They know how easy it was for them the previous year. They're just going to go out and do it again. And head coach Jerry Tarkanian warned his team, Duke has been hearing about you for the past year. They are going to come out and they are going to attack you. I promise you, they're going to be better. But sometimes it's really hard to convince a team that they're not quite maybe as good as they think they are, or they're overlooking someone, or more importantly, that team that you already throttled once, they're better. I know, you think they're not. You watch that film and you beat them by 30. I'm telling you, they're better. Yeah, whatever, coach, we got you. Hey, I know as a coach, I've had to tell teams that same thing. Hey, this team that we beat by 30, they're going to come out and they have a bullseye on you and they want to beat you so bad. Okay, coach, okay. Jerry Tarkanian went through the same thing. And Duke had been hearing about UNLV for a year. And UNLV's overconfidence absolutely cost them, because Duke pulled off the upset and sent UNLV home early before going on and eventually winning their first championship themselves. Hey, you want to be the champs? You can't take anyone lightly. UNLV failed to stay focused. They failed to respect their opponent. Hey, we just show up. As long as the bus driver gets us there, we're going to win this game. Yeah, it's not going to be that easy this time around. And for that reason, UNLV loses to Duke when they were absolutely the better team, but they couldn't come up with a big win in a big, big game. We finish up in the NBA, and we start with the same franchise that we were talking about to begin this whole thing, the Los Angeles Lakers. Because back in 2004, the Lakers were the team to beat. I mean, come on. Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal, Karl Malone, Horace Grant, Gary Payton. This won't even be close. The Lakers rolled through the Western Conference easily. And then when they got to the NBA Finals, they found out they would be facing the number 3 seed Detroit Pistons, not the top seeded Indiana Pacers, who were actually pretty solid. This was going to be easy. This was going to be a blowout. Well, yeah, it was a blowout. But it wasn't for the Lakers, because the Pistons blew out the more talented Lakers in just 5 games. What in the world happened? How in the world are you the big dog favorite? Not only go to the finals and get beat, go to the finals and get trounced. Well, we know now the Lakers were having those internal struggles between Kobe and Shaq. I know they kind of had that brother friendship, but sometimes brothers do fight and they didn't get along that well. But it wasn't just that. Karl Malone wasn't fully healthy. He was struggling on a bad knee, and his lack of being able to contribute really, really hurt the Lakers. And also, the Detroit Pistons were playing amazing defense. Think about this in the NBA Finals. The Pistons held the Lakers to 87 points, 80 points, 75 points, and 68 points in their four wins. 68 points? Yeah, that's not a typo. That's correct. The Lakers, meanwhile, they thought they were a really good defensive team. They weren't nearly as good defensively as they thought they were. Detroit guards Chauncey Billups and Richard Hamilton, they ran the Lakers guards to death, and LA went down in one of the biggest upsets in NBA Finals history, losing in five games to Detroit. There's no way that's going to happen. And as a result, we look at that Lakers era and kind of go, they kind of underachieved a little bit. We reach our final team today of teams that came up a little bit short, and we finish in a very recent, kind of a very fitting place. Because if you finish the regular season with the greatest record in NBA history, it kind of stands to reason you should go ahead and win the title, right? Well, the 2016 Golden State Warriors won 73 games. They lost just 9 times all year. That topped the 96 Bulls that had won 72 games on their way to winning the title. The Warriors, though, won one more, and they weren't done. They were going to rewrite the history books. But then, in the Western Conference Finals against Oklahoma City, we started to see some major cracks in Golden State. Because at times, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, of course, are phenomenal. Best shooting duo maybe ever. And at times, they disappeared. Sometimes, the Warriors' defense looked, I wouldn't say great, but looked opportunistic. And now, in this Oklahoma City series, sometimes they look terrible. They allowed Oklahoma City to score 133 points in Game 3. And then we saw defensive stopper and kind of all-around dirty work player Draymond Green acting like a fool, getting technicals, kind of towing that getting suspended sort of line. But the Warriors sneak past Oklahoma City thanks to Draymond Green not being suspended when he should have been, and they go on to the NBA Finals. They would face the Cleveland Cavaliers. Okay, so they had a close call, but they're still going to get their rings. Turns out, though, it wasn't a fluke. Because Steph Curry kept missing shots at clutch times. Klay Thompson shot 35% from three-point range. I mean, that's not horrible for a lot of guys, but it's horrible for Klay Thompson. And the Warriors' defense, again, proved to just not be very good. Then, add in Draymond Green getting suspended for that all-important Game 5. And we saw the Warriors were in trouble. They would fail to stop LeBron James at all in the NBA Finals. Forget LeBron James. They couldn't stop Kyrie Irving or even J.R. Smith. The Cavaliers pulled off the unlikely upset in Game 7. We know the Warriors had to go back, find a way to sign Kevin Durant and reshuffle that deck and come back and win it later. But they couldn't get it done back in 2016. Now, we have looked at some really talented teams today that came up a little bit short. They were all heavy favorites, but they all also had fatal flaws. Now, this year in the NBA, the Los Angeles Lakers are the favorites. Vegas has them established as the favorites. But after this long layoff, who knows what they're going to look like? And we saw today that the margin for error can be so, so thin between winning it all and being remembered as a team that didn't quite get it done. We're going to see how the NBA season turns out, and we will, of course, be talking about it in much more detail as it gets closer. Now, as we do every week, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. No matter who wins it all this year, in the NBA, in the NHL, possibly, I don't know, Major League Baseball, whatever, because of the weirdness of this season, there is a good chance we are always going to remember the champion from this season with a little bit of an asterisk right next to their name. Now, we have seen this happen in the past, and for the most part, it's not always the team's fault. And it especially, it's not going to be their fault this year. They don't have any control over what is going on in the world right now. But that doesn't mean we won't think of them as being maybe just a tiny notch below some other past winners. We will. Unfortunately for them, there's a good possibility that we will kind of remember them with a little bit of an asterisk. Today, on our Daily Dose Top 5, we will be counting down the top 5 winners that have a bit of an asterisk next to their name. Like I said, it's not always their fault. Sorry in advance. Sometimes it is. But a lot of times, it actually isn't. We start off at number 5. With a franchise that we do now think of when we think about winners. I mean, they have won 5 NBA titles. But back in 1999, the San Antonio Spurs won their first championship by beating the New York Knicks in 5 games. And I already know what you're thinking. No, I'm not putting an asterisk next to their name because they, you know, won their championship against the Knicks.
Man, that's just mean.
They get an asterisk because this was actually played during a shortened season due to the players' strike. Teams played just 50 games in 1999. So San Antonio had won just 37 games going into the playoffs. I'm not saying it's fair, but when you look at who they beat a 25-25 Minnesota Timberwolves team in the first round. And then they got to play a 27-23 New York Knicks team in the finals. It's not exactly murderer's row. Now, this was just the beginning of the Spurs' run. They would win 4 more titles over the next 15 years. But this title in 99, it just doesn't rate quite as high as the other ones did because of the shortened season. We move on to number 4. And we get to one of the biggest controversies that we have seen recently in a sport that, well, honestly, no one really cares all that much about, because it was in 2019 that the second leading favorite horse, Maximum Security, crossed the finish line at the Kentucky Derby in first place, and the celebration ensued. Meanwhile, another horse by the name of Country House had broken from an outside position and settled into mid-pack, but going into the final turn in ninth place, all of a sudden he started making up ground. He had to move out wide. He was actually close to Maximum Security when Security veered out, and it kind of pushed this horse a little bit outside. He couldn't respond to the rally. He held off the others, but he finished in second place. But following the race, the jockeys of 2 horses, Country House and Long Range Toddy, filed an objection to the result. The rules of racing in Kentucky provide for the disqualification of a horse if it changes its position in a manner that would impede another horse, costing that other horse a better place in the race. Although Country House was not like materially harmed by the swerve by Maximum Security, at least 3 other horses were affected, no question. But here's the thing. The Kentucky Derby had their stewards review this film for 22 minutes. And then finally upheld the objections and they disqualified the winner, Maximum Security, back to 17th place. The disqualification was the first in Derby history to remove the first place horse for an on-field infraction. The race was awarded to Country House instead. Hey, no one remembers Country House. We all remember Maximum Security. And we all remember the fact that it took almost 30 minutes with slow motion video review to see if he had actually veered into someone else's lane or not. That kind of tells me Country House has a well-placed asterisk next to his name in the record books. We move on to number 3. And we get to another team that, honestly, they did nothing wrong. They were just kind of a victim of circumstances. Back in 1982, the NFL had a 57-day-long player strike that reduced the 82 season from a 16-game schedule to a 9-game schedule. Because of the shortened season, the NFL had to adopt a special 16-team playoff tournament. Division standings were ignored. 8 teams from each conference were seeded 1-8 based on their regular season record. I mean, 2 teams, the Cleveland Browns and the Detroit Lions, qualified for the playoffs. They didn't even have winning records. So the Washington Redskins, who actually were dominant, they went 8-1, but they had a really easy road in the 82 playoffs. They beat 4-5 Detroit. They beat the 5-4 Minnesota Vikings. They beat the 6-3 Dallas Cowboys. And then in the Super Bowl, they beat the 7-2 Miami Dolphins and they win Super Bowl 17. Hey, Washington was a very good team, but they won a Super Bowl with just 11 total wins. That does put a little bit of an asterisk next to their name. Up next at number two is a team that we all kind of blame, but I'm not really sure that it's entirely their fault. But make no mistake, they do have an asterisk. Because we go back to the 72 Summer Olympics that took place in Munich, West Germany. And the United States men's basketball team had won the previous 7 gold medals at the Olympics. They were favored to win again in 72. The team won their first 8 games of the tournament. That put their overall Olympic record at 63-0, and they would be playing in the final against the Soviet Union. Now remember, this was back in the days of the Cold War. The U.S. and Russia were bitter, hated rivals. Both teams reached the final without any trouble. Late in the game, Team USA has to come from down 10. They were able to cut the Soviets' lead to 1 with 38 seconds left. With 7 seconds left, USA guard Doug Collins steals a pass at half court. He was fouled hard. He was knocked into the basket support. They actually think Doug Collins probably had a concussion. With 3 seconds left on the clock, Collins gets 2 free throws. He sinks the first to tie the game at 49. But just as he starts to shoot his second one, the score table sounds the horn. Now things are going to get crazy. The lead ref turns away from the free throw upon hearing the horn, but he didn't stop play. So Collins goes ahead and makes the free throw despite the horn sounding during his shot. He makes it. USA is up 50-49. It's going to get worse. Right after the free throw, with the ball now being live, a Soviet assistant coach runs out onto the floor to the scorer's table. He claims that the Soviet head coach had called for a timeout, which should have been awarded prior to the second free throw, and the referees hadn't given it to him. And now you weren't allowed to take a timeout after the second free throw. So the Soviet players just hurried and inbounded the ball, ran up the floor, the clock runs out, game's over. So they stop the game, they stop the clock, and they say, okay, there's still 1 second left on the clock. What we're going to do is we're going to put 3 seconds back on the clock. We're going to have them start again, but now they get a start at half court with 3 seconds. Not sure how they got that. The Soviets also made a substitution, which was illegal because you didn't get a timeout. They inbound the ball. They missed the shot. Game over. Team USA celebrates. But the officials again tell the court it has to be cleared. The Russians said they weren't actually given the timeout that they had tried to call. So the refs somehow give them another do-over for the third time. And this time, the Soviets inbound it. They hit a shot. They win it. And it's all good. The referees okay it. Team USA refuses to accept their silver medals. The Russians were brought home as heroes. I mean, no question the Russians were trying to get away with some stuff during this game. But hey, the officials allowed it to happen. But make no mistake, most of the rest of the world looks at this win for the Russians as a huge asterisk next to their win. Because no one's sure that they really deserve to win that game, and they come in at number 2. We finish up our Daily Dose Top 5 list of winners that have an asterisk next to their name, and we don't have to go back very far. It was just back in 2017 that the Houston Astros beat the Los Angeles Dodgers in the World Series. But now we know, it has been revealed, they were cheating all season by stealing opposing pitchers' signs, and then they knew what pitches to lay off on, and they knew which pitches to crush to the moon. The Astros fired their manager and fired their general manager, which is kind of funny, because the Astros owner says the Astros didn't even benefit from stealing signs. Okay, so why'd you fire those two? They were pretty good at their jobs. But the Astros, without question, have an asterisk next to their name in the record books. They were blatantly cheating. They deserve that asterisk next to their name. Now, whoever wins a title this year, there's a good chance they're going to have an asterisk next to their name officially or unofficially. And I think it kind of depends on who wins it to a degree. I mean, if like the Indiana Pacers win it all, you don't think people are going to be saying, oh, that's just because it was a short and weird season with that long break. Of course it will. It might not be fair. But as you can see today, these things aren't always fair. While we're on that subject, maybe this would be the perfect season for my Denver Nuggets to finally win a championship. Yeah, I doubt they could even do that, even in an asterisk season. Hey, next week on The Dose, we'll be doing our best to keep you up to date with the latest and greatest in the world of sports as only we can. I know, still not all that much going on sports-wise, but we are getting a lot of sports news, and we're starting to get some things start to move a little bit. Sounds like things are going to be ramping up very, very soon. We will do our best to stay on top of it for you. Hey, don't forget to go over to YouTube, subscribe to our Daily Dose channel, look for our Daily Dose logo. I will leave links for it so that you can find it very easily. Have to say thank you all so much for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for subscribing to that YouTube channel. But most of all, thank you so much for sharing the show with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Have a great week, everybody. I will see you all next Wednesday.
Don't say to be fair. Hate when people say to be fair. It sounds like to be fair.
To be fair.
To be fair.